Hey, welcome to the Meat House. This is Jeff. You're with my buddy Chris.
How you doing today, Jeff?
It has been a little bit of a morning. I know it's been a little bit of a morning for you too.
Oh my god. Oh, and just not just the research for the show, just life. It's just been pounding the two of us for a while now.
Yeah. No, this morning, since we were running a little bit late, I was like, hey, I've got a great time to go get that toilet I've been replacing and been putting off. I'll just get that done. I've just got a little bit more to do. I get a little bit more done. Now, this toilet has been a pain in the butt for a couple weeks because it's a 40-year-old toilet on a 40-year-old plumbing system. Its time has come.
Yeah.
I get it off. I get ready to put the new toilet on. The closet flange, the bit on the bottom that's attached to the floor that waste goes into, cracked. And so the new toilet wouldn't sit at all. It just, the little part that holds the bolts was broken off. The bolts were wiggling. So, you know, you can't sit on that and expect it to work right. And it turns out the closet flange was like basically 40-year-old melted into the plumbing.
Ugh.
So I had to like get a chisel and a small saw and cut and chisel it free. It took like two whole nights of effort just to get that like and preserve the plumbing. So, you know, I had that all done. It was like I put the new one in, got all the stuff like glued, sealed, whatever. I put that new toilet on today, got everything ready. And was like, okay, so I think we're ready to go. I think it should be all watertight. I, you know, attached the supply line. I turned the little supply valve. The little supply valve, the part that goes into the wall and you started leaking on me. Yeah, I know, right? I can't win.
Yeah, man, I just had car trouble. Mine was just car trouble.
Yeah, yours was no less time consuming.
Yeah.
At least yours had a simple solution.
All right. Well, today we're talking about mead.
Well, we always talk about mead, but
the mead of the day is an apple pie mead.
Yeah, this is from Waffle Sauce Meadery. I think they're out of Florida. This is Matt's apple pie mead.
Yeah. It's a fruit and spice mead. Now, I've made apple pie mead before. Basically, what you do on secondary, I just put the spice out, put in an apple pie.
Yeah.
To soak in my meat. It's not complicated, but makes a wonderful flavor.
Nice little glug 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 sound coming out of the bottle. So it's dark amber kind of color.
Yeah.
A little bit of haze, but it's pretty clear.
Oh, a lot of apple in that. Very a lot nice. Of apple in that smell.
Maybe a little spice on the back end, but it is apple up front. Very forward.
Yeah. I smell a little bit of that spice back there, but all it's really hitting me is apple.
Mm-hmm. There's maybe some honey sweetness across the middle, too.
Okay, I got that now. A little acidic.
Mm-hmm.
Not bad.
I mean, as we'll talk about in a moment, apples are acidic.
Yeah.
That's funny. That's normal. There's a little bit of acidity. It's a little sharpish at the front of the tongue, but it's pleasant enough.
That's good.
Got a good, nice crisp finish. These spices are light. They're not overwhelming, which is easy to do.
Clove and cinnamon they're in your face.
Mm-hmm.
This one's nice. There's a soft touch.
Yeah. Yeah, nice crisp finish. Just goes real easy, real light. Apple, honey sweetness. I mean, it is...
It has a thick mouthfeel.
It does.
A thick mouthfeel. Not complaining, mind you.
No, but it has a... Do we know what ABV this guy is? We don't. I don't see that on the label here. Okay.
Well, it doesn't... It feels like it's going to be... Mid to upper ABV, just by how it's hitting my mouth.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a sacky mead feel just from the mouthfeel alone.
Yeah.
That could be the sweetness level. That could be the...
alcohol, but we don't know what it is, but it's... Good job, Matt, or whoever put that together. All right.
Nice one.
Now, as always, we'd like to thank Box of Barleycorn. You're outstanding people. You are helping us immensely, even as we're playing these podcasts together. I go into questions, and I come out with answers. It's really nice. Jake and his friends there, glad to help you out. If you need anything there, give them a call, contact them online, and use our code MHP10. Thank you. I'm working on it. To make sure you get your 10% off from us.
Absolutely. Whether it's the equipment, the ingredients, the information, they're a great go-to source. So look them up, shoot them an email or a telephone call, and hey, let them know that we sent you. Use that promo code, save yourself some money, and everyone wins there.
And you let them know that, you heard from us, and we appreciate that.
And hey, let's not forget to thank everybody that is subscribing and commenting and sending us mail, just listening to the podcast alone. Giving us the listens is such a huge help. We appreciate you guys so much.
And we appreciate every single one of you.
Yeah, reach out to us. Tell us what you like, what you don't like, what you want to hear about. It's all good. You can find us info@themeathouse.com or on our Facebook, The Meat House. Reach out. Say hi.
We try to be friendly.
So our topic for today, we were going to talk about additives in meat, because there are a lot. And
some you need, some you don't. I've got a bunch in my box. I've never used, ever. True. And I should throw them out.
Realistically, there is a certain subset of new home brewers that look at some of the stuff that we use on the regular, even the stuff that we use super regularly, like potassium metabisulfite or potassium sorbate, and go, oh, chemicals. I don't want chemicals in my mead. But
everything's chemicals, guys. Everything. Ask a chemist, apples are chemicals.
Just because it has a four-syllable word name doesn't mean it's bad for you.
Yeah.
Basically, all of these are relatively harmless. They add a level of control and ability to, do stuff to fine and refine and make better your mead. So this is about embracing, all the stuff in your toolkit and getting a look at some of the toolkit for those of you that are a little bit more new to the field. The first thing that I thought we'd talk about, and this mead is, a good illustration, acids.
Acids.
Obviously your raw ingredients, like your honey, your apples or citrus fruits or things like that, will have acid all by themselves. There are acid additions that can help balance your acidity, take up a meat that needs it a little bit more just for the brightness or the flavor. And usually when we're talking about acids at a homebrew level, there are like the big three that you're going to see.
Okay.
You'll get citric acid.
Yeah.
Citric acid obviously comes
oranges,
from
lemons,
citrus like fruits. Right. There's malic acid, which is from apples.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Got me there.
You ever bite a Granny Smith and it's tart? It's
yeah.
All bejesus.
Malic acid. Got it.
Finally, there's tartaric acid. And tartaric acid is a little bit of a weird one. That actually comes from winemaking, of all things. It's I don't remember the chemical process for it, but it kind of falls out in the process of it. And
they get that from the oak itself?
No, from the wine itself.
Oh, the wine itself. Okay. Yeah. Like from the skins and such.
I'm not sure.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, yeah,
it's from what I've been told, it's a byproduct of the fermentation process. So, okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, but those three are
the big three,
right? The big three. And usually when you go to the store, you'll see those three in separate bags, and you'll also see a product called Acid Blend, which is just, it's a blend of those three.
Okay. Yeah, I've got that.
Different manufacturers have their own proprietary, one part citric, one part malic, blah, 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 blah. Any of them work? Realistically,
I just always use the formula of put a little bit in, test it. If it's not enough, put a little more in, test it. Because it's easy to put in, really hard to take it out.
Mm-hmm. But if you put more in and you're not getting anything extra out of it, you're done.
Yeah.
You need to try something else if it's not hitting what you want to hit.
And we're going to hit this again and again, but don't forget about the three-legged table of this thing. Your acid, your tannin, your sweet. Mm-hmm. You need this for a balanced meat. And does it have to be level? No.
No.
If you want a little more of one thing or the other, fine. But don't let the glass fall off the table.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. The other kind of acid you can see at a homebrew store is ascorbic acid.
I've seen that.
Yeah. What is ascorbic acid?
I have no idea. I've never used it.
Vitamin C.
Okay.
That's vitamin C. It is relatively, usually you see this used, of all things, more in beer than in mead. And this is mostly in an antioxidant capacity.
Would it be something like citric acid?
I would think it would taste like citric acid. I mean, yeah.
Okay.
All the vitamin C supplements that I've seen for just like basic human dietary consumption have a kind of a citrusy flavor. But from what I'm understanding, it's a powerful acid in that it is low dose and high efficacy. And you put a very small amount into a 5-gallon batch of beer when you're at the bottling phase, and that helps protect it from oxidization and keeps the beer tasting and feeling fresh
Okay.
when you're drinking it. But I haven't heard it used a lot in mead. I'm not sure if it has a purpose, especially because mead compared to beer is already pretty acidic,
Yeah.
and I don't think it really needs more acidity. So, but you will see that at your homebrew store if you're looking around at the little wall of additives or the rack of additives as the case may
And
be.
again, number one on the board, if you have questions, ask questions. Because, okay, my wife made this analogy to me. I'm a mason. And she said, the problem with masons and mead makers is not getting them to talk. It's getting them to shut up. So we'll be glad to help you.
For sure. So, the next thing we can talk about is enzymes. And again, when you go to your homebrew store, you're going to see a few different enzymes there. There are usually, like, if your homebrew store sidelines in distilling, you'll see like amylase and beta amylase, alpha amylase, things like that. Don't worry about those. Those are strictly for getting sugars out of starches. And really, they have no use for mead making unless you're planning on doing like you're turning a bunch of grain into mead without malting or doing the it just seems overly complicated to
Yeah,
try anything like
okay, I have
that.
no idea what
But
that is, but I'm just going to say no.
the enzyme you do need to be aware of and be using is pectin enzyme or pectinase. That is to break down the pectin that is in fruit, all kinds of fruit, some of it more than others. Some has very little pectin, some has a ton of it. Granny Smith apples, for example, we were just talking about, also have a ton of pectin. You see those in like the homemade jam and jelly recipes using, I don't know if it's the skin or the whole of the fruit, but like a bunch of that has, you boil it down and you get the pectin out of there to make strawberry jam set right, you know?
And you've told me many times, if you're doing a fruit mead, make sure you get some pectin in there. You need it to preserve that flavor.
Right.
And
Absolutely.
mind you, the additives we use, you're not going to taste them. What they're going to do is they're going to enhance what's there so you can taste that.
Right. The other advantage of these enzymes, especially if you're using whole fruit or frozen fruit, like fruit that is in its most natural form, not processed, you're going to be able to get more of the juice and the good stuff and a lot of like the polyphenols and actual anthocyanins and all the nice stuff out of the skins. If you have pectin enzyme or another enzyme
In
like
there with
that
it, yeah.
to break that down and help you get that out, you'll be more effective, you'll get it out faster, and it is just a lot better of a product to use than trying to hope for the best and throw everything in there.
On that note, I actually just recently gravitated out my wild plum I've been working on for a
Oh,
couple of months
nice,
now.
nice.
And it was given the wild plums were given by a farm called Pink Pony Farm. And they said, here, try this. This is after they gave me the Arona berries. And I put pectic acid in there. And within 3 weeks, the fruit was pretty much done. It was just, I pulled the bag out because I could see the amount in the liquid. And it was unbelievable. The smell is amazing.
So, in addition to like the pectic enzyme, the basic pectic enzyme, there are also some proprietary enzymes you can find on the market now. These are mostly used in winemaking. So, like if you look at Lalozyme, the company that makes all of our little gray sachets of yeast, the EC1118s and the D47s, that's Lalemant yeast. Lalozyme is a enzyme product from Lalemant. And they have a couple different varieties. There's like a CV something, an EX something. The EX, if I remember right, is for red wines. The CV is for white wines. And these are useful to us, especially from a fruit making standpoint, because like if you're making not only red grapes, but like for example, blueberries or raspberries or things with that kind of red coloration, the red wine enzyme, probably pretty useful. By the same token, if you're doing like stone fruits or apples, pears, things like that are
Peaches, dragon
right.
fruit. I've done that.
Yeah, the lighter colored flesh, probably the white wine would be good for that. That will help you extract from the fruit. That'll help you get more stable things like that. We'll talk a little bit more as we get into tannins too, because there's a very similar thing going on with those from a winemaking standpoint, obviously.
Okay.
But you know,
Mead is wine.
yeah.
It's okay. Wine is grapes fermented with water and yeast. Mead is honey fermented with water and yeast. what you do from there is makes all the difference.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we're all talking about fermented things, whether it's, you know, apple juice or honey or fruit or grain or whatever. The process is still the same because it's the same microorganism doing essentially the same task, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, these are also useful as an adjunct for, you know, whole fruit, whether it's the lighter colored, like, you know, apples and pears and blah, 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 or the dark red berries and things like that. These are used very exceedingly well in those kind of situations because you get to extract more of the good stuff out of your fruit and you get more use out of the fruit, frankly.
Right, so, next. Well, you know, you just brought up a moment ago, tannins.
Yeah, tannins. We can talk a lot about tannins, and there are all kinds of different sources for tannins. I mean, we're not even talking about oak. I think that's like a whole different discussion.
Oh, yeah, we'll do that in another show.
Yeah, yeah. Especially what we're talking about are more of the tannin powders, so to speak. You go to your homebrew store, and they just have tannin powder. Yeah,
and it's usually called wine tannin.
Mm-hmm. Wine tannin, tannin powder,
yeah,
something along those lines. And really, this is used primarily in the start of fermentation as opposed to in the finishing, like oak is. The idea here is there's this concept or this idea called sacrificial tannins, right? The sacrificial tannins give the various components of the wine as it's fermenting something to bind to. It can grab onto those, you know, the cyanins, the polyphenols, some of the different like little flavor chemicals, as well as some of the things that are responsible for keeping the wine, you know, that dark red color, for example. That's a that gives them something to hold on to and something to make it more stable, I guess you could say. Obviously, the basic wine tannin is one variety of this, but there are, like I said before, there's also a number of proprietary products out there. Rouge Berry or Blanc Soft are the two that we see at our homebrew store, Box and Barleycorn. Mm-hmm. They are, I think, as opposed to regular wine tannin derivatives, which I can never remember what those are made of specifically. I want to say it's oak, but I could be wrong.
I've heard oak is a lot of wine tannins, just oak.
Right. In the case of Rouge Berry, that's actually from the bark of fruit trees. I want to say it's like a blend of cherry and other stone fruit varieties, but darker, redder. And the idea here is to give you those fruity flavors.
It also helps you preserve the color.
Exactly. Yeah. That tannin will bind in. So you put that in early in fermentation. So you have the tannins there for the, you know, the yeast and the products of that yeast fermentation to, you know, grab on and do their thing and kind of just, you know, do the stuff. On the other hand, that Blanc Soft.
I haven't used that yet.
That's probably better for like a traditional or a, you know, again, something more like a white wine. That's actually relatively flavor neutral. As I remember it, it's made from the skins of gallnuts or something like that.
Wow. I never even heard of those.
Yeah. It's somebody has figured out that if you need tannin and you need to add that to a white wine that is already pretty light, you may end up like oaking a Cabernet Chardonnay. Oaking a Chardonnay. Jesus, Jeff. Come on. You're supposed to be
Get your wine straight here, man. I mean, you only have, what, 500 varieties to think about?
And I'm only 5 sips into this glass.
No, yeah, you have no excuses.
It could be a...
No excuses.
Anyway. Yeah, if we're going to go in and get a white wine going, and it's going to be light, and we're probably going to oak it anyway, they want something that's relatively flavor neutral but can still provide that tannin advantage. And that's what this product is for. There are other... like proprietary ones that are available on the market, at least on the like large scale winemaking. I want to say like Fermentis has their line of it, but.
And the bottom line is, you know, get what works, get what you have available, get what works for you and make it work for you.
Right. Absolutely.
This is home mead and winemaking it's a hobby and it's an experiment. My wife says when I get a new idea, I can put it on my mad scientist coat. Mm-hmm. And it's true. And I'm trying to make things do what I want to do. And most of the time I win. A lot of the time I do win.
And
sometimes I don't.
part of the fun of mead for me, though, is that mead does not have this like centuries-old tradition of, hey, we're in Munich, so we're making, this particular brand of like fest beer or whatever that we're serving in Oktoberfest. And oh, well, we're in the south of France, so we're making this particular varietal of wine. We've done it this way for 100 years, and
2,000 years, whatever. But no, the point is, mead, although it is a very is the one of the oldest fermented beverages, it's new ground and nobody's stuck about it. Make what you like, man.
Well, and there are so many other of these like fields, like winemaking and beer making and things like that, that we can pull some techniques and some cheats from and see what we can do with it.
Yeah, so we can do that later.
So that's it. There's just so many different little ways we can go down this trail and kind of poke and see what's fun.
Yeah. And plus, being a home brewer, there are no rules.
Yeah.
There are no rules.
You're making it for you and your friends, and maybe a competition if that's your thing. But who cares?
Yeah. Do what you want.
So, next up, we're going to talk about fining agents.
Fine agents.
Fining agents are there's a bunch of these guys on the market. There are some simple ones, there are some more complicated ones. The one I recommended to you that you've used and liked, and that I've liked for the longest time, is like Dual Fine or Super Clear.
Love the dual fine. Wow, I like. Okay, all this really does is it gets all the particulates in your wine and binds to them, makes them maybe they fall to the bottom.
If you guys remember high school science class, the idea how all of these fining agents work is something called ionic bonds. Basically, something either has a negative charge or a positive charge, and it attracts particles that are either, in the case of a negative charge, positively charged; in the case of a positive charge, negatively charged.
Like a
And
magnet. It's a
like,
magnet. It's a chemical magnet.
and it makes these particles kind of clump together until they're heavy enough, they just sink.
And when you do this, it happens fast. I mean, if you put your fine agent, like Dual Fine is my favorite, when I put it in, I got this horribly cloudy mixture. And I've done this with a clear bucket. And next morning, I did that like 5, 6 o'clock in the evening. Next morning, all of it, I could see all the way through.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah. No. Dual Fine is great. It's a combination of kiesel salt and chitosan. And I am told that some people could have a negative reaction to chitosan because it is derived from shellfish, but it's been heat processed enough that I'm not sure that's as big a thing.
In defense of chitosan, I have a very strong sensitivity to shrimp.
Okay.
If I eat shrimp, I feel like I got beaten on with a bunch of people with a very heavy pillow. I've never had a problem with it. It's never affected me, not once.
I am not that sensitive to shellfish, but my insides are not happy when I have shellfish. So I've never had a problem either. And, it's not like I have an EpiPen in case I randomly consume a shrimp, but.
Yeah, me either. But point is, if you're uncomfortable with that, there are other ones. There's bentonite. It's
Bentonite is,
clay.
yeah, it's a clay. It is, and the cool thing about bentonite actually is that you can use that at the start of fermentation or at the end of fermentation.
Yeah.
The bentonite, the only thing I will say for it that I don't like is that it is a mucky little sludge when you're mixing it up.
And you've got to get it mixed. Okay, it comes in a powder form. You add a liquid, your water from your what you're making, whatever you're going to add, and you mix it until it is a slurry. You don't want clumps, you don't want bumps, you want it a smooth slurry. And that I have mixed for 15 minutes and not been done. It's just, oh my gosh, this, I put it in a jar and I shook until my arm would fall off, and I got another thing to mix with. It takes forever, is the bottom line, but it works just fine.
It does work. And the one thing I will say, if I've experimented an age and a day ago with trying to put a little bit of that slurry into primary. And yeah, no, I think it does make a noticeably clearer product when it gets to secondary, and when it's time to use other fining agents like Dual Fine, there's just less there in the first place.
Yeah.
So there's probably something to it if you're interested in trying that. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah,
It's
I mean,
and plus bentonite is dirt cheap
yeah,
too.
oh yeah, that's the cheapest one on the board.
Another really common one we could talk about, though, is gelatin. You can buy gelatin at your homebrew store or just in the baking aisle of your
Grocery
supermarket.
store, yeah.
It is essentially the same thing. And kind of like bentonite, you make it into a little bit of slurry. You need to activate it because it's gelatin. But it has a It is the opposite charge of Kieselsahl in the dual fine. So
I don't know if it's positive or negative. I don't care.
I cannot remember for the life of me which, but I know I've done a thing where I did gelatin first, then the dual fine, and that actually worked even better. I think it's probably overkill in most cases because the dual fine works great. It just, I would try dual fine first and stick with dual fine unless you need something else. Realistically, if you have an issue with a fruit wine and dual fine is not clearing it the way that you want it to be cleared, I would go back to the pectic enzyme and try another dose of that too, because that can be a problematic thing that I've cleared up that way too.
Actually, I looked it up for us. Gelatin is actually naturally polyphotonic, meaning it contains positive and negative.
Interesting.
I'm going to check a little more into that. That was just a quick search.
I could swear it was one or the other, but I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
But nonetheless, the point is you have options. You have gelatin, you have the bentonite, you have the dual fine. Find something that works for you. You have access to. If you're doing it, save money, that's tonight. It works. You just
Right.
have to work a little harder.
Yeah. So the next one I wanted to talk about, a little bit weird. These are yeast derivative products. I don't know if you've ever used like an OptiRed or an OptiWhite.
I have used OptiRed.
They are kind of in the same class as those, like the Rouge Boost or Rouge Berry or whatever, or the Blanc Soft. Their purpose is similar in that one of the things they want to do, as the name implies, OptiRed, they want to make the red last bright. It's supposed to encourage that color quality.
Yeah.
The difference is, whereas like Rouge Boost or Blanc Soft is made from a plant product, it's a tannin product, these guys are actually derived from yeast. They take autolyzed yeast and fractionate it, or they'll break it up essentially so that you get different parts of those dead yeast cells, and they help in the fermentation process. Again, this is something you put in primary, basically along with your yeast and your nutrient and everything else. But they give things for those chemicals to bind to. I don't want to get into the weeds with this, and I don't remember half the stuff that I was reading on this when I was researching this anyway. So, but
I
I've
will tell
tried
you,
it.
when I used OptiRed, okay, the first time I used OptiRed was my third batch of blackberry vanilla. And you said, and I looked back and I said, Jeff, why is this looking sad? The color was just fading. And he goes, use OptiRed. I said, and me being the new batch, what was that? What's that? And he goes, oh, didn't tell you about that. But he told me about it. And that batch, I used it. And I have a bottle from that third batch still. It is still as good as the day I got it.
Red color is such a bear because it's so pretty in the glass and you want to hold on to it, but
It didn't want to stay.
it is fleeting,
Yeah.
especially like strawberries
Strawberry
or
is the worst. Oh my
are...
gosh. I am going to scream about my first strawberry forever. Oh my gosh. That was so painful. I made this gorgeous red bucket of mead coming. When it came out, it was pale, pale pink. And I'm sitting here, where did it go?
At least you've got pale pink. I've heard a number of people make, a nice strawberry mead that came out straw colored.
Oh my God. Mine was just a step away. I'm just sitting here. Oh, it broke my heart. I mean, it tasted fine.
Right. It's still, but if it's strawberry, you want
I
pink
want
or
red.
red.
I want
Yeah.
red. I mean, like this for me with mead, if it's honey, it's honey, it's mead. I want sweet a little bit at least.
Yeah, we consume things with our eyes before we consume them with our mouth.
Yeah.
And it's just a little disappointing, right?
Yeah. Anyway, so one thing I would like to talk to you about though
Sure.
is, or do you want to keep on OptiRed? You ready? You want to jump in?
I think we've said what we need to say, that you guys can look up the white papers on OptiRed. I don't understand half of the cell biology involved with this myself on an intuitive level.
Honestly, we don't need to.
Right. Yeah,
It works. I'm good.
it works.
I want to talk about lactose. It's something I haven't used, I'm building up to right now. And lactose is from milk.
Right. It is the sugar component of milk, the same way that, when you're talking about the sugar in honey or fruit, that's like a mixture of usually fructose and glucose or sucrose or things like that.
Okay.
So lactose is a separate thing. It's a sugar component. For whatever reason, unlike fructose or glucose or the combinations of those that, the yeast can get into and kind of chew apart, they don't know what to do with lactose.
So it doesn't ferment.
Right. It is a non-fermentable sugar. It's not as sweet as either of those, unfortunately. So it doesn't make very good, like, you know, back sweetening thing. But the weird thing is that it adds a level of kind of creaminess or a kind of a bulk to the mouthfeel.
Okay.
That is, it's appreciable. Usually you see this used in like stouts or heavier beers like that, where, you know, there's, you want some thickness and some creaminess to the mouthfeel of the beer for the experience.
It's like a milky feel in the mouth. Okay. I mean, that's what I'm trying to build up towards that right now. I'm trying to think of a good way to use it right now.
Right.
But I got some without any plan to use it yet. Got it. I'm that guy. But I want to know what I could do with it.
I would think, you know, we talked about in a couple of weeks, we're going to talk about seasonal meats. I would think like maybe like an orange cream or an orange vanilla style.
Or even, you know, like a berry cream or something. Like,
yeah,
that.
Something be, along those lines.
That'd be nice.
That could be like a nice little summery sort of thing. Yeah. I could see that working. And, you know, a lactose addition, you would need the berry. You need the sweetness. You might even want to use some like flaked oats for some like bready flavor to that, depending on what your flavor profile looks like. But
sounds interesting.
The point is, when I think about using lactose, I'm not thinking a lot of flavor so much as mouthfeel.
Okay. Well, yeah, I knew it was a mouthfeel. I knew it wasn't a flavor per se, but I wanted to know what I was to expect with it, mm-hmm. so I can try to plan around that. All right. Is there anything else you want to go over there?
Yeah, let's see. What was next on my list? Obviously, one of the contentious ones, nutrients.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. I mean, obviously, you can use raisins. Kidding. Don't use raisins. Raisins are not nutrients.
Okay. I will defend raisins simply because the only person I know that does it just fine.
I've had that same mead. It was a good mead, but raisins are not nutrients. One of the guys I know on, you know, the Facebook groups for mead makers did an analysis, mm-hmm. as far as like the amount of nitrogen, which is the primary thing you're getting out of these nutrients, mm-hmm. like how much raisin you would need to get the equivalent of a dose of like Fermade K or Fermade O or whatever.
And it's immense.
Yeah, we're talking like 3.3 pounds per gallon of raisins.
He uses a pound. He's told me.
Yeah.
He uses 1 pound. And it's, and I know it's, I've tried what he did. Failure. Utter failure. I don't know what magic he uses or what on the light of what moon, but it worked for him.
For everybody else, we suggest you do better.
Yeah.
the better in this case, the one that we see the most, one that we use ourselves, is Fermade. Fermade K. Do you know what the K in Fermade K stands for, by the way?
Not a word. Nothing.
Kosher.
Kosher?
Mm-hmm. Do you know what the O in Fermade O stands
organic.
For? Organic.
Organic. Oh, exactly. Yeah. I knew that one.
Yeah. That one's obvious. The K stands for kosher for whatever reason.
I have no idea.
I mean...
Okay, I'm glad the Jews are watching our back on that one. I like it.
Apparently, that's what they use to make manischewitz. So
okay,
yeah, okay.
I'm in.
I'm guessing. I don't know, but yeah, no, that's what that K stands for, and I was just surprised to learn that. So there's your fun fact for the day. These two guys are largely made with, again, it's autolyzed yeast, it's dead yeast that they've broken down through, you know, I'm sure proprietary processes, to get the nitrogen that makes up so many of the cell walls and important cellular functions of those yeast cells. Because, yeah, yeast, why not use it?
Yeah. But the reason we use Fermate K generally is because you use less, it costs less.
Right.
Flat out.
Fermate K, as opposed to Fermate O, also includes diammonium phosphate, or what you see sometimes as DAP. DAP is another thing you can add all by itself. I don't necessarily like DAP. DAP is a... DAP is like supercharged products of a yeast source. It has, I want to say, like 2 or 3 times the amount of nitrogen by mass as Fermate K, which has about twice as much as Fermate O by mass.
Wow, that's just so a bunch.
I haven't used it in a very long time. I kind of always likened it to feeding a kid a king-size candy bar. Just like a sudden burst
on the fire.
A sudden burst of energy, and it gets a little hot and a little funky. And I would rather just keep it a nice, slow, steady ferment.
I'm not a patient man, but I'll be patient for my Fermate K. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I will tell you that if you want to do the vegetarian a vegan option. Tomato is considered vegan. I don't know why, but
I mean, all those little single cellular lives suffering for your expense.
yeah,
But
I eat honey too, so
I mean, I suppose if they're a single cellular organism, they don't have a brain stem or brain structure to sense and experience pain. But
yeah. Well,
okay.
let's be honest, every time we kill a batch of mead, we're killing billions of yeast out there. We're just genocide for our meat, our yeast.
Let's also be fair, though. If you're vegan, you should not be drinking mead because that's,
Honey.
yeah, honey is not vegan friendly anyway. So, you
But
know.
the Middle Eastern countries' religions made an exception. You can too if you want. Anyway, onward.
Onward and forward. So, yeah, no, there's a bunch of different products on the marketplace. You'll see yeast nutrient, generically stated yeast nutrient, beer nutrient, wine nutrient, yeast energizer, diammonium phosphate, Fermade, things like that. These are all similar but slightly different products.
And
And
I've even heard some people that they'll simply oxygenate their mead. I don't know if that's different, but
That's not a nutrient situation. That is just a that helps start it early and start it fresh. That's especially in high gravity meads, like some of the stuff you do, it's not a terrible idea.
I'm guilty of sack meads. Yeah, I got it.
So
I just stir a lot. My forearms are looking great.
the idea of oxygenation is separate. That gives them oxygen instead of nitrogen
Okay.
to start with. But when they're in that first phase, like essentially, like I don't know if you're, again, cell biology is not my forte, but I have a passing enough knowledge to know, like, when you introduce the yeast and there's that lag phase, so to speak, that point where before the airlock starts bubbling,
Yeah.
what the yeast are doing is just rapidly doing cell division and multiplication. They are growing their colony to the point where they can effectively metabolize all that sugar. And so the oxygen in that case is useful because there's just a lot of metabolic work going on that is not deriving the same benefit that we're seeing from, you know, bubbles and alcohol and things like that. But, you know, they need oxygen at that point. After fermentation really starts going, oxygen is not your friend.
No, it is not. Oxygenation is bad once you have your mead going.
Yeah,
I know this because that's what makes your wines taste just bad,
yeah.
just stale.
Stale, kind of sherry flavors, sometimes cardboardy flavors. Yeah, there's it's not good.
Yeah. So, but anyway, but the point of your niche nutrients and boosters and all that is to get you a head start. Because do you need it? Maybe.
We could also throw Gopherm in this too.
Yeah, go for them.
Gopherm is kind of in that you use it in the beginning. It's not necessarily it contains nutrients, I will say, but the nutrients it contains and some of the things it contains are more for that lag phase and that buildup phase than they are for the long run of fermentation. Whereas Ferment K, Ferment O, those are kind of just to keep your colony going and make sure that they can get every last little bit of the sugar that you're giving them processed. So,
Now, mind you, now the longer you let your yeast go, the drier your meat gets. There are ways around this. Both you could cut it short if you want it sweeter, or you can back sweeten it. Don't feel hindered. Don't think you have to put on a clock. You don't.
Right.
You
And
can make it work.
as I have advocated many, many times before, what I prefer to do, what I tell other people to do, is put in the amount of honey you need to get the alcohol you want to reach, ferment dry, stabilize, and then back sweeten. And that actually brings me to the next thing I want to talk about, which are those stabilizing chemicals.
Yeah.
I want to say I mentioned those at the top of the episode, like potassium sorbate and potassium metabisulfite.
They're yeast killers.
Yeah, that's what they do.
That's what I use them for. I use them both at the same time.
It's a 1-2 punch combination where, if I remember right, metabisulfite will basically prevent the yeast from being able to divide, to grow, and put them in a weakened state. And the sorbate, when they're in that weakened state, kills them. If they're not in that weakened state, it doesn't do as much. It kind of can prevent. You'll see sorbate and the number of like things on the ingredients for like antifungal, antibacterial stuff on food products and things like that. It's same idea. But yeah, no, these get poo-pooed, I think, more than anything else. And not using them, you can end up with bottle bombs. We've scare storied enough on this podcast, I think, for that. But you know.
Those are fun dreams I wake up screaming from. So yeah.
Yeah, just
But kill your yeast. I mean, But then you have the control to do what you want with from there.
Right. And the advantage of using a potassium-based product as opposed to like a
Sodium? Yeah.
sodium-based product.
It doesn't taste salty.
Right, exactly.
It doesn't taste
Yeah.
salty.
Potassium is very flavor neutral, so you will not notice, but you will be protected. These also have a nice antioxidant effect, so that they will help preserve your meat from oxidization in that, the brief window of going from fermenter to bottle, so to speak.
I actually met a man once on my first time to Belcrate, just over a year ago, that he made a system to filter his mead completely enclosed from one can to the other and to the bottles after that. And I'm sitting here, I looked at him and said, well, how'd you make you? Well, I'm an engineer. Stop right now. Back up. I liked you a little more a minute ago. I don't want the plans. I'll just do what I got. Great guy, don't get me wrong, but oh my gosh, scared me.
So I think as we kind of come to like wrapping up this topic a little bit, there are a few things that don't really fit into any of the other topics that I've talked about before. One of those, again, it's a potassium product, potassium bicarbonate.
Yeah.
What if your acid's a little too high?
Yeah, it's just too high. You want a little bit of tannin. Or no, you want sweet. You want sweet for that.
You can rebalance it one way or the other, but if your acid is just so high that your fermentation stalls out, for example.
Oh, then I also don't know.
Potassium bicarbonate. It's
Bicarbonate,
a
okay.
it lowers pH and it is relatively flavor neutral. You don't want to go overboard on this either because it's overdo that and then you have a meat that tastes kind of chalky, which is not a great thing.
Yeah.
Potassium bicarbonate is kind of like baking soda. It lowers the
Lowers the pH.
right
Yeah, I do it
and
in cooking, so yeah.
or I sorry raises the pH, I should say.
Oh, it does. It is
Yeah,
lowers the
acidity
pH.
is the lower of the two.
Yeah. It's the acid is lower.
Right, it lowers the acid, kind of the same way like baking soda would
Yeah,
if you're cooking.
I use baking soda for making tomato based stews and such. Brings up tomato flavor, lowers the acid. I should have known that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the same idea. You don't want to overdo it. It can get kind of a chalky flavor to it, and if you've got acid problems that bad, maybe rethink your ingredient list in the first place. But if you just need to raise your pH a little bit above, like for whatever reason, I noticed when I was first starting mead making, I would get weird stalls. And a lot of that was just CO2 dissolved in the mead that I needed to agitate more to get out in that first week or so of fermentation. That game changer for me. But one of the things I tried was the sodium bicarbonate, and it kind of works. It's not the best thing, but it works.
Now, I will. And I was talking about other allergies up earlier. I like to bring this up. I've met a couple of people that are allergic to sulfates and they have to get sulfateless wine. If you need to kill your yeast, bring it up to 120 degrees. It's called pasteurization, I believe. That will kill yeast. You have to be careful.
Yes, you can, pasteurization is an option. Be careful with this, obviously, because and the weird thing about pasteurization is that a lot of people will use the USDA guidelines for pasteurizing milk as far as time and temperature,
No.
which I would think milk would be a lot more friendly to micropathogens than a finished wine would be,
Yeah, agreed.
but it's not this they're not the same thing.
The same thing. But you have options. If you have questions, ask your supplier.
Right.
Write to us. We'll help you where we can.
Realistically, the other thing to think about though, even if you do have problems with sulfites, those are also naturally occurring in meat. So even the sulfite-free meads that are the or wines that are marked wines that are marketed as sulfite
Non-sulfite wines.
right, they still have some in there. It's just not added for the sake of, the antioxidant
Didn't
protection,
know
things
that. I'm
like that.
glad that was
Yeah,
brought up.
truth in advertising, right? Because
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I'm
decaf has no caffeine. False information. Anyway.
let's not go down this whole. Yeah, the another weird one, but one that I've seen floated around, here or there quite a bit. Glycerin.
Okay.
What do you think glycerin is for?
Preserving.
Nope.
No, I have no idea.
No. Glycerin, vegetable glycerin, or like a food grade glycerin, as opposed to like a, you see that used sometimes as lubricants and things like that. But vegetable glycerin or food grade glycerin is added in small amounts to increase the body and mouthfeel of wine or mead.
Okay. I've never used it, so I don't know. I have a clue.
It can also, from what I've been told, some people have told me that it also kind of like tones down the acidity just a little bit, and it makes it a little bit more manageable. But I wouldn't use it specifically for that in the first place. As far as like that final finishing step, if the body or the mouthfeel isn't quite where you want it to be, a tablespoon or so of glycerin per gallon can
That's not much.
get you
Okay.
there. So yeah, no, and I've. Last time I bought it to try that, I think I bought a quart, and I've still got most of the quart. So,
Okay. Hope it's all good. Anyway.
right, yeah. The last thing that I wanted to talk about, and this is probably contentious. This is something that I have seen discussed a year ago,
Okay.
and I've tried it myself without a lot of success. But some people have sworn that it works really well, and some people have sworn that it's kind of meh. It's a amino acid called L-phenylalanine.
No clue.
Yeah. Apparently, this is a precursor or similar to precursors in a lot of the honey flavors.
Oh, yeah, I do know about
Yeah,
this.
I think I sent you this
Yes, you have.
article, and I've tried it. I can't say that I've experienced a lot, but I've not tried it in anything with like a high ABV volume kind of thing.
I'm gonna give it a try then, because I usually do fairly high.
Right. Well, and if you're putting more honey into it in the first place, you might get more out of the dosage. The other thing about this is that the dosage, this is kind of like the glycerin thing where you buy a package of it. I forget how big of a package I got. I want to say like maybe a half a pound of it. In a powdered form, Ziploc powder bag, and the dosage rate on this is a gram per gallon.
Oh, jeez.
Nothing at all.
No.
And if you're a gram per gallon, whoever was publishing this in the first place revised their dosage rates. If your starting gravity is at or above 1100
Okay.
a gram per gallon, if it's below 1100, half gram per gallon.
Wow. Now, just to be clear, what this is a chemical strain that tastes sweet like honey. Is that right?
It is very similar to the flavor molecules, the flavonoids that make up the flavor of honey on the tongue.
Okay.
So basically, when the yeast is fermenting out all this different stuff, it gives more things for these molecules to bind to that enhances the flavor of honey by making combinations of things that taste very similar to honey
Okay.
in the base honey flavor.
So use incredibly sparingly then.
I wouldn't say that. It's an amino acid. It's a building block, like so many other, vitamins and minerals and things like that in our diets. I don't think you could do any harm by having a lot of it.
Yeah, but a gram per gallon. I mean, come on,
Is
don't overdo
nothing
it.
at all.
Yeah, don't overdo that.
I want to say when I measured that out, it came out to something like a quarter of a teaspoon, maybe, for a 3 gallon batch.
Jeez,
Nothing at all.
nothing at all. So
So.
you have a good chunk of that package still left.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I probably will until I retire from meat making.
Bite your tongue. Not allowed. I'll drag you back kicking and screaming if necessary.
Yeah, I'll probably be retiring from meat making when they're putting me in a box.
Okay, there. Okay, we're in accord. All right, Jeff. Thanks for coming. Thanks for being here with me. Have me over. This is Additives. I hope we've helped you out. Please, any questions, put them online. And can't wait to talk to you next time, Jeff.
Yeah, absolutely. No reason to fear these guys.